Welcome to Zichron Daf Siman. My name is Avram Goldar, and today we're on Masechet Shabbos, Daf Pei Aleph. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, the Gemara relates that when Zonin came to the Beis Midrash, he asked, which size stones are used for wiping oneself after going to the bathroom? Rashi explains that knowing these sizes will determine the size that is forbidden to carry on Shabbos, since they have a use. It will also determine the size of the stones a woman may carry in his courtyard and not be concerned with muksa, because they're set aside to use. The answer that one takes three stones, the first the size of an olive, the second the size of a nut, and the third the size of an egg. Zonin was surprised and asked if one was expected to bring in a scale to the bathroom to weigh the stones. So after some discussion, they concluded that the measure of stones is a handful, regardless of size or number. The Gemara brings additional opinions regarding which stones are used. Point number two, Rabba Bar Rav Shila asked Rav Chisda what the halacha was concerning whether one is permitted to carry the stones with him to his roof if he wishes to relieve himself there. Rashi explains that Rabba Rav Shila was asking if he should be prohibited because of Tircha Yisersa, extra exertion. Rav Chisda answered, Gadol Kavod HaBriyah Shedoich Hislosa Seishim B'Torah. Human dignity is so great that it even suspends a Torah prohibition. Rashi explains that just as the Torah permits a Talmud Chacham to not pick up lost objects that are below his dignity, despite the low sase to not ignore lost objects, so too here one is allowed to take the stones up to the roof to preserve human dignity. Even though muksa is a rabbinic prohibition, it is rooted in the Torah prohibition of lo sasur, do not deviate from the words of the sages. And point number three, Rav Huna said it is forbidden for one to relieve himself in a freshly plowed field on Shabbos. Out of concern, the person will take a stone from the ridge of a furrow, and after using it, he'll throw it inside, and through flattening out the field, he'll be liable for a tolda of plowing. Rashi explains that when one levels a furrow in a field, it's considered the malacha of plowing because he's preparing the ground for planting. So once again, the 3 points are number one. The Gemara relates that when Zonin came to the Beis Midrash, he asked which size stones are used for wiping oneself after going to the bathroom. Rashi explains that knowing these sizes will determine the size that's forbidden to carry on Shabbos since they have a use. It will also determine the size of stones one may carry in his courtyard and not be concerned with muksa because they are set aside to use. The answer that one takes three stones, the first the size of an olive, the second the size of the nut, and then the third the size of an egg. Zonin was surprised and asked if one was expected to bring a scale into the bathroom to weigh these stones. So after some discussion, they concluded that the measure of stones is a handful, regardless of size or number. The Gemara brings additional opinions regarding which stones are used. Point number two, Rabba Rav Shila asked Rav Chisda what the halacha was concerning whether one is permitted to carry the stones with him to his roof if he wishes to relieve himself there. Rashi explains that Rabba Rav Shila was asking if it should be prohibited because of Tircha Yisersa, extra exertion. Rav Chisda answered, Gadol Kavod HaBriyah Shedoich Hislosa Seishim B'Torah. Human dignity is so great that it even suspends the Torah prohibition. Rashi explains that just as the Torah permits a Talmud Chacham to not pick up lost objects and below his dignity, despite the losase to not ignore lost objects, so too here one is allowed to take the stones up to the roof to preserve human dignity. Even though muksa is a derabanan, it's rooted in the losase of losasur, do not deviate from the words of the sages. And point number three, Rav Huna said it is forbidden for one to relieve himself in a freshly plowed field on Shabbos. Out of concern, the person will take a stone from the ridge of a furrow, and after using it, he'll throw it inside, and through flattening of the field, he'll be liable for a tolda of plowing. Rashi explains that when one levels a furrow in a field, it's considered the malacha of plowing because he's preparing the ground for planting. All right, so now we go to our Simfer payoff, and in this case, the most popular suggestions are definitely either grandpa to match the grandma, and paw of an animal, bear paw, tiger paw, dog paw, Clifford the big red dog, paw, bear paw. And then we had, a little more off the beaten track, a PA, a personal assistant. We had a PA, a physician assistant. We had Paya, a wig. We had panda bears. And then we had the angry golfer from Boston who shot a 10 over paw, which I thought was very funny. But we're going to go with grandpa because people said, come on, it's got to match the grandma. So we're going to go with grandpa. So thank you, everybody, for your suggestions. And here we go. The grandpa took a special set of three rocks up to the roof to preserve his dignity. After his grandkids convinced him there was a problem of going in a freshly plowed field with regards to the malacha of plowing. Once again, in slow motion. The grandpa, that means we're on Daf, pay off. The grandpa took a special set of three rocks, which reminds us, the Gemara relates that when Zonin came to the Beis Midrash, he asked, which size stones are used for wiping oneself after going to the bathroom? Rashi explains that knowing these sizes will determine the size that's forbidden to carry on Shabbos, since they have a use, and will also determine the size of the stones one may carry in his courtyard and not be concerned with muksa, being that they are set aside to use. They answer that one takes three stones, the first the size of an olive, the second the size of a nut, and the third the size of an egg. Zoni was surprised and asked if one was expected to bring a scale to the bathroom to weigh the stones. After some discussion, they concluded that the measure of stones is a handful, regardless of size or number. The Gemara brings additional opinions regarding which stones are used. So the grandpa took a special set of three rocks up to the roof to preserve his dignity, which reminds us. Rabbi Rav Shila asked Rav Chisda what the halacha was concerning whether one is permitted to carry the stones with him to his roof if he wishes to relieve himself there. Rashi explains that Rabbi Rav Shila was asking if it should be prohibited because of tircha yisarasa, extra exertion. Rav Chisda answered, Gadol kavod abriya shedeiches losa se shebatorah. Human dignity is so great that it even suspends a Torah prohibition. Rashi explains that just as the Torah permits a Talmud Chacham to not pick up lost objects that are below his dignity, despite the lo sase to not ignore returning lost objects, so too here one is allowed to take the stones up to the roof to preserve human dignity. Even though Muksa is a rabbinic prohibition, it's rooted in the prohibition of lo saser, do not deviate from the words of the sages. So the grandpa took a special set of three rocks up to the roof to preserve his dignity. After his grandkids convinced him there's a problem of going in a freshly plowed field with regards to the malacha of plowing. Which reminds us, Rav Huna said, it's forbidden for one to relieve himself in a freshly plowed field on Shabbos out of concern that the person will take a stone from the ridge of a furrow, and after using it, he'll throw it inside, and through flattening out the field, he'll be liable for a toll of plowing. Rashi explains that when one levels a furrow in a field, it's considered the malacha of plowing because he's preparing the ground for planting. So once again, the grandpa took a special set of three rocks up to the roof to preserve his dignity after his grandkids convinced him there's a problem of going in a freshly plowed field with regards to the malacha of plowing. All right, now it's time for a four blot back chazara. Daf Ein Zayin. So the Simbra Ein Zayin is an A's, a goat. So here goes. The stubborn goat, that means we're on Daf Ein Zayin. The stubborn goat was smashing the kazesim of congealed wine and blood with his horns, which reminds us, Rav Yosef said that Rabbi Nassan was discussing congealed wine, and Rav Yosef and Yehuda, who was discussing congealed blood of a nevela, both hold that a ravias of a liquid substance will congeal into a solid substance the size of a kazayas. Abai suggests that this is not necessarily so. Perhaps Rabbi Nassan only holds this for congealed wine, which is a thin liquid, and loses much of its volume when it congeals. But blood, which is thicker, may not require ravias to produce a kazayas when congealed. And perhaps Rabbi Yosef Yehuda only holds this for congealed blood, which is thick, and doesn't lose much of its volume when it congeals. But wine, which is a thin liquid, requires more than a ravias to congeal into kazayas. So the stubborn goat was smashing the kazesim congealed wine and blood with his horns to get rid of the swarm of flies and gnats, which reminds us, review to say the name of Rav. Kol ma shebara kosh baruch hu b'olamo, labara davar echad uvatala. In all that a kosh baruch hu created in his world, he did not create even one thing needlessly. Among the few examples he brought are, the slug was created as a remedy for a sore, the fly was created as a cure for the sting of a hornet. Rashi explains that one crushes the fly and places it on the place of the sting. The gnat was created to be a cure for a snake bite. So the stubborn goat was smashing kazesim of congealed wine and blood with his horns to get rid of the swarm of flies and gnats when he spotted a traveling salesman selling cloaks, overcoats, and sudras for those who fear Hashem. Which reminds us, Rabbi Zera once encountered Rabbi Yehuda was in a lighthearted mood, so he decided to ask him about curiosities in the world, such as the meaning of names of various items. Rabbi Yehuda answered, an outer cloak is called a lebusha because wearing it keeps one from being embarrassed, lebusha. An overcoat is called the glima, because one who wears it is shapeless like a golem. And a head wrap worn by the rabbis is called the sudra, because the secrets of Hashem are revealed to those who fear him. Sod Hashem liriyav. Daf Ein Ches. So the Simfra Ein Ches is a child going ugh. So here goes. The child went ugh, ugh. That means run Daf Ein Ches. The child went ugh as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey. Which reminds us, Abai stated the following rule for determining the shear of a substance that one is liable for carrying if that substance has more than one use. Any substance that has two uses, one common and one not common, the Rabbanim follow the common use to determine the minimum share for liability, even if this results in a leniency. For example, wine's common use is for drinking, while its use for healing is uncommon. The Rabbanim therefore followed its use for drinking, which is a large measure, even though this results in a kula, in a leniency. Any substance that has two uses, both of which are common, the Rabbanim follow the common use that results in astringency. For example, honey is used both for eating as well as for healing. So the Rabbanim follow its use for healing even though it results in astringency since a smaller amount of honey is required for healing purposes. So the child went, ugh, as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey all over the paper receipt, which reminds us, the next Mishnah continues to identify the minimum shear for various substances, including this list, are paper enough to write a tax collector's receipt, a kasher mochsin, a race paper enough to wrap around the mouth of a small flask of balsam oil, hide, or enough to make a kameya, parchment enough to write the smallest parchment of tefillin, which is Shema Yisrael. So the child went, ugh, as he spit out the terrible tasting medicine made of wine and honey all over the paper receipt, when all of a sudden there was a knock on the door, and it was the tax collector's runner. Which reminds us, it was taught in the Brisa that according to the Tanna Kamma, one is only liable for carrying a tax collector's receipt, a kesher mochsin, if he has not yet shown it to the tax collector. Once he has, it no longer has a use, and therefore one is no longer liable for carrying it. Rav Yehuda holds that he's still liable since he has a need for it. There's machlokes about what Rav Yehuda meant that he has a need for it. Abai says he will retain the receipt in case the tax collector sends runners after him, the check of his taxes are paid. If he couldn't prove he paid, he'd be brought back to the official to be cleared. Rav Yehuda holds that he would keep the receipt to avoid this. Rav and Rav Ashi bring alternative pshatim. Daf Ayin Tes, so the Simcha Ayin Tes is an 8, a pen. We think of a scribe, it's over with a quill, so here goes. The rookie scribe took his quill. Scribe taking his quill, that means run Daf Ayin Tes. The rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing on unprocessed hide the size of a kameya, which reminds us, Rav Nachman told Rav that unprocessed hide has the same minimum shear to be liable for carrying as processed hide, which is the amount to make a kameya. He brings a proof from a Mishnah later on that teaches that the minimum shear from a leaven whitening wool, menapates, disentangling it, and saveya, dyeing, is the same shear for tova, spinning the thread, since the raw wool stands to be spun into thread. So here too, in the case of unprocessed hide, its shear is the same shear as tanned hide, since it stands to be tanned. So the rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing an unprocessed hide the size of a kameya. When all of a sudden he realized his hands were tummy from touching his tefillin scrolls, which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa regarding which parts of the tefillin render one's hands tummy when touched, in keeping with one of the 18 enactments learned earlier on. The Tanna Kamma says the straps of the tefillin make one's hands tummy when they're attached to the tefillin. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Shimon, touching the katsitsa, the leather boxes, render one's hands tummy. And Rabbi Zakkai says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, one's hands only become tummy if they touch the mezuzah, the scroll of the tefillin itself. So the rookie scribe took his quill and practiced writing on unprocessed hide, the size of a kameya, when all of a sudden he realized his hands were tummy from touching his tefillin scrolls that were written on cloth. Which reminds us, it was taught in the Brisa that it's halacha l'moshe m'Sinai, that tefillin must be written on cloth, which is the outer layer of the hide, and a mezuzah must be written on duchsustus, which is the inner layer of the hide. When one writes on the cloth, he must write on the side of the cloth that originally faced the flesh of the animal, and when writing on duchsustus, he must write on the side that originally faced the hair of the animal. This price was brought as one of the many challenges to Rav, who said that tefillin may also be written on duchsustus. The Gemara deflects the challenge by saying that the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai may be only stating how to fulfill the mitzvah of writing tefillin in the best way possible. However, tefillin written on duchsustus may still be kosher. Daf Pei. So the symbol for Daf Pei is payday. So here goes. On payday, payday, that means we're on Daf Pei. On payday, the painter put out some cash and bought himself the newfangled write-on with ink suit, which reminds us, the Mishnah stated that one is liable for carrying ink in Rishus of Rabim if it's in the amount that two letters can be written with it. Rav said that if one took out enough ink that one can write two letters with it, but instead of placing the ink down in Rishus of Rabim, he wrote two letters in Rishus of Rabim while he was walking, for example, on a piece of paper or his clothes, he's liable for the transfer. The ksiva, the writing, is considered the hanacha, the placing down of the ink. But if he took out enough ink to write one letter and wrote a letter, and then took out another amount of ink for one letter and wrote a letter, he's exempt, because the two half measures do not combine. And the reason is that at the time he took out the last letter, the first letter had already begun to dry and decrease in volume. Therefore, the two letters no longer combine to form a full measure. So on payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself the newfangled write-on with ink suit. After he slimmed down on the half-fig diet, which reminds us, it says in a Mishnah earlier in Daf Ein Vav Amid Beis, that one is liable for carrying food out into Rishus Rabim if it's the amount of a grogeris, a dried fig. It was taught in a Braisa that if one took out the equivalent of a chetzi grogeris, half a dried fig, and then he went back inside and took out another equivalent of a chetzi grogeris, and he did so behelam echad, in one lapse of awareness, then he's liable for one chatas offering. However, if he did them b'shtei halamos, in two separate periods of awareness, then they do not combine, and he's pater. Rav Yossi said that even if the two acts were carried out in the same lapse of awareness, he's only liable if he took them out to the same rishus. If he took them out into two separate rishus of rabbims, the two half measures do not combine, and he is pater from being a chattas. So on payday, the painter pulled out some cash and bought himself the newfangled write-on with ink suit after he slimmed down on the half-fig diet while plastering his client's home with lime mixed with sand. Which reminds us, it was taught in the Braisa that after the churban, the rabbanon forbade one from plastering his house with lime unless he mixed straw or sand into the plaster. Rashi explains that mixing the straw or sand into the plaster would darken the lime, which would be a sign of avelus of mourning for Yerushalayim. Rav Yehuda says that mixing in straw is permitted, but sand is prohibited because it strengthens the plaster, which offsets the detrimental loss of its whiteness. All right, now it's time to conclude with our pop quiz of 10 questions plus the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Here we go. Number 1. Which daf do you learn the meaning behind words for clothing? That's on daf Ein Zayin. Great. Number 2. Which daf do you learn that one should darken plaster for a sign of avelus over Yerushalayim? That's on daf Pei. Good. Number 3. Which daf do you learn why the Tana used Ofa instead of Bishul in the list of the Lamentes Malachas? That's on daf Ein Dalet. Great. Number 4. Which daf do you learn that one can carry stones up to the roof to wipe oneself for a purpose of Kavod Abrius? That's on daf Pei Aleph. Good. Number 5. Which daf do you learn that according to Rabbi Tarfon, one would only bring one ashem for being with the Shipcha Harufa, even if it was in 5 different halamos? That's on daf Ayin Beis. Good. Number 6. Which daf do you learn what the shear is for something that has 2 different uses? That's on daf Ayin Ches. Great. Number 7. Which daf do you learn that you can combine something that has a more stringent shear with something that has a more lenient shear to be chayav for carrying? That's on daf Ayin Vav. Good. Number 8. Which daf do you learn the question of how many stones one would bring for wiping? That's on daf Pei Aleph. Great. Number 9. Which daf do you learn that according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds malchus she'ein tzarichu l'gufa yechayev, one would be pater if it's a case of makalkel? That's on daf Ein Gimel. Great. And finally, number 10. Which daf do you learn that one is pater if he writes 2 letters separately? That's on daf Pei. Great. Now we go to the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. Number 1. Which daf do you learn that one would say a motzi on pasba bekisnin if he had a sizable shear? That's on daf Mem Beis. Good. Number 2. Which daf do you learn the source for making a zimun? That's on daf Mem Hei. Good. And finally, number 3. Which daf do you learn the bracha that one would make on ground flour? That's on daf Lamed Vav. Excellent. All right. That concludes our pop quiz, plus the 3 bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. This is Rabbi Avraham Golder from Zichru wishing you a great day and great learning.